Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, by VeloFix.com, by RunCatalina.com, the Catalina Island Marathon, the 40th anniversary coming up on Saturday, March 11th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $80 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on iTunes or on Babbittville and subscribe to our Endurance World newsletter. Our next guest, the founder of Speed Golf USA, Mr. Scott Dowley. Scott, how are you?
Happy New Year, Bob. Good to be here.
Hey, thanks so much, man. So what I'm excited about is that Speed Golf is still going. As you know, we started playing in the early 90s, and we still go out and play every once in a while. But you guys are pretty serious about this, putting on tournaments. And when did you go from being a traditional golfer to a speed golfer?
Yeah, that happened back at the end of 2012, and I was in my early 30s. My wife and I had three kids in the previous 4 years. And I had been working an office job. And in my 20s, I had tried playing on tour, and the dream hadn't died. And I found myself sitting in an office, you know, 9 to 5, and I just got more desperate, more desperate. And I thought, you know what? I have one life to live. I want to pursue that dream. And so I started running to get into shape to go back and play on tour. I knew it was a 1 in a million shot, but again, we got one life to live, so I went for it. And I, right after that, I discovered speed golf, which was like the combination of my lifelong passion with this newfound passion of running. And I thought, this is like heaven sent. So I went out in May of 2013. I played my first speed golf round. It was exhilarating, and I knew that this was something that I wanted to pursue as a professional athlete. And once I got into the world a little bit, I also saw the opportunity, like the business opportunity, that, hey, this is something that the world of golf needs. Now, I don't think it's going to replace golf, but I think on the fringes of the sport and in terms of attracting, you know, new peoples and new target groups to the sport, I thought, man, this was perfect. So I feel like, in a sense, the baton was passed to me, and I'm carrying it forward now.
What always hit me is back in the 90s when I was putting on tournaments in speed golf. It's one of those things where if I put on a marathon, I'm blocking off roads, I could have 20, 30, 40,000 people. If I'm putting on my Muddy Buddy event, I could have, you know, easily 2, 3, 4,000 people. One of the limitations of putting on the tournaments was you really can't have that many people out there. So do you find that limiting in terms of how many people can you put on a course?
Yeah, there are quite a few limits that you have to work around, and you just have to, over the years, I've had to figure out ways to overcome those objections and ways to overcome those obstacles. Yeah, you're not going to get, you know, thousands of people doing that. There was another venture I started called Lynx Run, which is just running on golf courses. It was foot races, but on golf courses, and that has many benefits. But for speed golf, yeah, you know, and also, there's not a large group of people. I mean, speed golf is a niche sport.
Yes.
And I think it can still be successful that way, but I don't think we're ever going to see shutting down a golf course and seeing hundreds to thousands of speed golfers out there, you know, racing around the golf course.
What's fascinating is my buddy Paul Huddle, a former co-host of the show, he and I have been playing seriously for, I don't know, 25 years. And we, you know, we play early morning, we wear the headlamp and play on an executive course and carry just a few clubs. And he said something today that really resonated. He says, you know, the thing about triathlon, it's a lifestyle sport. It's become a lifestyle sport. Golf is not really a lifestyle sport. It's something you do. But when you take it in this context of running and playing, it can become a lifestyle sport. And there's, you're sort of in between a rock and a hard place. You can put on tournaments, which is great, but at the same time, to me, the real growth opportunity is the average everyday person using the golf course as a fitness location.
And you've hit the nail on the head, and, you know, since we first met and started talking, you've said the same thing over and over and over, and it's really a message that I'm pushing now very hard, which is that golf is a fitness sport.
Yes.
And that really is true. A lot of people don't think that, but when you look at speed golfers and you look at people that are playing that fast and making it an athletic sport, when you're hitting, you know, a 6-iron with your heart beating at 170 beats a minute. Man, it's exhilarating, it's exciting, and I think there's a certain type of person, like people who love triathlons, that are attracted to that. And we're starting to discover that. But you're right, the real growth opportunity here with speed golf is at the grassroots level where, you know, some people like to go to CrossFit gyms, some people like to go to the gym, some people like to go run around the track. Well, hey, there's nothing wrong with 1 or 2 days a week. If it's an opportunity that's made available to them, I think there's many people that would go out and enjoy getting in their fitness on the golf course, because it's not so much about score. It's about fun. It's about going fast, and it's about fitness.
It's funny. When we play, we play again on an executive course, and we spread out across a tee box with three of us, and we keep track of pars and birdies, right? A point, because who can keep track mentally of all the of your score, and right. Who wants to? So a par is a point, and a birdie is 2 points, and that makes it easy. Plus, there's no negative, right? If you have a bad hole, you pick up and you run to the next hole. How open have you found the golf courses? Because that's the big issue, is availability, right? The courses, if they're full, if the economy is booming, they're going, do we really want these idiots out here running on a golf course?
Right. You know, we talked about other obstacles, and to be honest with you, golf courses have been very open when I go talk to them, because what we're looking to do, moving so fast, we need to get off first in the morning.
Yes.
Because obviously once we tee off, nobody's going to catch us. But what we also need to do is realize that there's the maintenance crew out there early in the morning that's trying to prepare the golf course for the rest of the day. So how do you fit right in between those two things? And I'll tell you, Bob, we just hosted an event on December 31st. Up in Austin, Texas. It was called the Pace of Play Challenge, and we had a speed golf event, but we did it a little bit differently. Instead of teeing off on one and running all the way around the golf course and stopping the clock when you putt out on 18, we decided to make what we called heats. So maybe a heat would be one hole long, and we had four people do it, and you start the clock when you tee off, and you stop it when you finish on that hole. So we had one hole heats. And then we'd stop and move to the next tee box, and maybe we had a 2-hole heat and a 4-hole heat. So the whole tournament took about 2.5 hours, which ended up being perfect because it's faster than the players behind you, but it's not so fast that you're causing problems with the maintenance crew up ahead of you. So really, we think we found something that works. It was just as exciting. It doesn't stray too far from traditional speed golf in that we're still adding up all of the time and all of the strokes and putting them together to create a speed golf score. So I think we've really found something that we're going to push up this year moving forward. And, for instance, having a national championship down here in Houston, Texas in December, that's something that we're going to do. We're going to have a qualifying round, and then we're going to have this concept of having heats. So I'm really excited about it.
I love it when you say traditional speed golf. It's like the ultimate oxymoron. Yeah, it's funny because when we play on the executive course and you're running along and you've got your headlamp on and you come up to a hole and the maintenance guys are there, you know, you can wait a second and they pull off the green and you run, you hit and run and you're done. But the difference is if you're playing on a regulation course and I come up to tee off and you're hitting a driver and the guy out there has no idea you're coming, because we're way ahead of what the traditional golfers would be, then it sort of becomes a danger situation.
Yeah, correct. And that's where we don't, as speed golfers, you know, we're passionate, we're excited about what we're doing, but at the same time, we want to respect the golf course, we want to respect the superintendents.
Sure.
There's a lot of education that needs to happen there, but I'll tell you what, Bob, you also have hit it with these executive courses.
Yes.
Because that is something that we're going to see over the next 5 years. There's not going to be a boom in golf course growth like traditional golf courses, full-length golf courses. What we're going to see is little 12-hole, you know, par threes that you can convert one area into a par four and maybe a whole other area into a par five. You know, Tiger Woods is starting to do that. Tom Lehman has done it. So really, we're going to start seeing these smaller executive golf courses, which are absolutely perfect for speed golf and what we're talking about.
Well, and, you know, my vision was always, imagine coming to the club, and I think that the average person who's trying to lose 15 or 20 pounds is our perfect candidate, right? Because running on pavement, running on a treadmill is just not fun. But running on the grass and carrying a stick and hitting a ball every 100 yards or 200 yards is awesome. So imagine you show up at the course and you've got Polar heart rate monitors there and a trainer telling you, listen, today you're going to run hole one, you're going to walk hole two, this is the heart rate I want you to be at. We've got the, we'll keep track of GPS you, so we'll know exactly what your mileage is. And then it really does become a, not just a fitness sport, but a fitness facility where who would ever think there'll be a trainer at a golf course?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about, you know, 100 acres, 150 acres of parkland, of grassland that's used for one sport, and it's not even used all day long.
No.
Because the tee sheet isn't full. And so that's what we need to do in the 21st century is start thinking creatively and going, how can we utilize this land better? And I think you're exactly right. That's how we can do it. It's, you just described a fitness program, just like there's you know, Zumba and all kinds of other fitness programs out there that have become popular. There's no reason why somebody can't create a fitness program. And again, these are all things that I wish I could do, but we're working on building up this this element of people that want to commit full time to growing the sport. So we want to get the, you know, the competitions going through Speed Golf USA. I'm also really trying to work on that fitness program, which I think is just a fabulous concept.
The other thing that's like when we play, and we play Loma Santa Fe Exec, and they charge us $12, and we go out and play. And it's something, when you're paying $12 or $15, you don't, for the average person, it's like, oh my God, I got to play 36 holes of golf in 90 minutes, and it cost me $12. Everybody wins. Golf course is getting new people out there. Everybody wins. But all of a sudden, when you're going to a, you know, a regular golf course and they're saying, okay, our cost is $60-$70, and then is somebody going to pay that to run around? Or do they feel, or does the value come attached to how much time I'm out there? Hey, if I'm paying $60-$70, I want to be out there for 3-4 hours.
Yeah, and that's really the new paradigm that that I think is going to be created in the golf industry, is really layering on top of the cost for playing the golf course, the quality of the golf course, and in a sense also the time of day that you're playing. I think the next dimension and the next way that they can really attract golfers, because people don't want to pay as much as they're paying right now to play the game.
Right.
So when you can layer on and figure out a strategy for how do you charge people for how much time they want to be on my golf course. So if you want to be out for a regular traditional round of golf, it's going to cost you whatever the typical rate is at that golf course. But if you want to be out there for less time, then there starts to be a discount that's applied. And, you know, with technology today, Bob, there's no reason why we can't do that. And people can come in with their little monitor and say, hey, I was out on the course for 3 hours and 4 minutes. You know, what do I owe you? Or there's a strategy for having that happen. But these concepts are new, and I think it's going to take time to shuffle throughout the industry and for somebody that's creative with software and technology to go, yeah, let's give this a try, and then to get a golf course to jump on board.
So as a real golfer, and I'm imagining you started playing at how old?
Oh, I was 8 years old.
Yeah, so you played through high school, I'm imagining, through college. And as a real golfer, one of the guys who plays with us shot 79 at Torrey Pines, and I'm like, oh, my God, you're a real golfer. As a real golfer, what did you notice the first time you started running and playing? Did you notice that your game deteriorated at all?
My game did not deteriorate. Of course, just like in any regular round of golf, in speed golf, you're gonna have some poor shots.
Right.
You're gonna duff it. I played in the tournament last week, and we had a tough uphill climb to the third hole, and it was a short par three. I took out my wedge and I hit, 4 inches behind it, and the ball, went 50 yards into the junk. So, it still happens to me.
You're right.
But what I noticed was, having played golf for, 30 years, was that golf wasn't fun anymore, because I was playing the exact same format every time I played. I was just going out trying to shoot my best score ever. And, that rarely ever happens. If once a year where kind of everything goes right and you have that day, the rest of the time you're frustrated because you know you're that good, but you can't pull it out of yourself. And so what I noticed when I first played speed golf was that, number one, my concentration and my what I was paying attention to was different. I was looking around at the trees and the sun was rising, and I was on a golf course, in a park. It was beautiful. So that's the first thing I noticed. The second thing I noticed was that, man, I've really trained my body over the last 30 years. If I just shut the mind down, it already knows what to do. And so I really surprised myself many, many times by hitting drives that went further than I normally hit them,
yep.
by being really deft with the wedges around the green and not thinking, just stepping up and chipping it up to 2 feet. You know, and putting is difficult in regular golf. It's also very difficult in speed golf. So that part I'm still trying to figure out. But really, really positive experiences the first time I played.
To me, one of the things I liked was playing, especially playing an executive course, I was carrying less clubs. And mm-hmm. I got better at those clubs because I was hitting them more often. A lot of times guys have, you know, your bag has, 14 clubs in it. And when was the last time you hit a 2-iron? The thing's sitting in there. So you're pulling it out of the bag and you're trying to hit something that you haven't hit in 10 years to a specific part of the green. Whereas when you're playing the way we play, you're thinking the fat of the green. You're not thinking anything besides just hit the ball flush. And all of a sudden, the thing's going to the green. And when you're putting, sometimes you're not thinking about making it, and it goes in. That, to me, has been the best part of it is I think sometimes, I find myself playing better than if I stood and thought and tried to process what I was trying to do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have a difficult time playing, 4-hour rounds anymore. I get through 9 holes, and I think, wow, I could have already played 36 holes, and I still
right.
have 9 more to go. And so you lose interest a little bit. And I think anybody loses interest trying to do something for 4 hours. That's a long time to be focusing on. It actually requires training. So that part is difficult. But with the number of clubs, since I started playing speed golf, I play with 6 clubs. And as somebody that's playing since they were 8 and has been a
yeah.
professional golfer, you would think that I would say, no, you need 14 clubs. Well, even when I play regular golf, which is very rarely, I only play with 6 clubs because I don't need any more than that. And if that's true for me, I think it's even more true for people that haven't developed as much skill. It's similar to me to like a painter. If you're going to start painting, you don't get all the brushes. You don't get the fan brush and the thick brush and the pencil brush. You take a brush, you start painting, and you figure out how to do it. And when you get better, then you can grab the fan brush and learn how to use that. And I think it's the same way in golf. If people are going to get into golf, they should buy a few clubs, learn how to become really good and proficient with those, and if they feel like they need another tool, then certainly go out and buy it. But, golf has bought into the marketing and branding, and everybody's got to have 14 clubs and spend $2,000 to get into the game. It's just simply not true.
What I love is when we come running up the 18th to the 18th hole, which is right next to hole 1 at the Loma Santa Fe Exec. The 3 of us come up to the tee box, all 3 hit our shots, and every once in a while, all 3 of us will go on the green. And there's this lineup of people who are going to be teeing off hole 1. And they've got all the golf cart, the bag, all the clubs, and here we are carrying 3 or 4 clubs, and we're jogging up and we're getting a par in about, 30 seconds. And you just see their mouths hanging open like, oh my God, I can't believe that these guys just did that. But at the same time, none of them are coming up and going, I want to join you. There's just something about traditional golfers at this point that they haven't really thought about, gosh, this would be better because, 1, I'll play just as well. 2, I'll take way less time. And 3, it's still as social as regular golf.
It is. And one of the things I discovered, a year into this thing, about a year and a half into this thing, was that speed golf is on one end of the spectrum, which is the fastest end.
Right.
We're able to play golf at 18 holes in 45 minutes on foot. And people really, they don't believe it until they see it. There's the other end, which is these 4.5 and 5-hour rounds, which are absolutely crazy. What I realized about a year and a half into this was there's an entire spectrum in between there that players could find a niche for themselves in terms of, what's best for their game. And so I think just to start pulling people in the direction of faster play, making faster play cooler. I mean, I don't understand why the PGA Tour and the PGA of America aren't making playing fast cool. And when I say fast, again, I don't mean an hour. I mean
2 hours.
3-hour
yeah,
rounds,
yeah.
which
yeah,
are
yeah.
not difficult.
We had the first speed golf tournament we put on, a guy named Tom Hunt, who had been the American record holder 10,000 meters. He won. And, we had Jay Larson and had some guys who were really, really good golfers.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom didn't even bring a driver or a wood. He used a 3-iron. And his whole thing, his philosophy was he was playing for bogeys. And he knew he could hit his 3-iron every single time, 175 yards. So even on the par fives, if he chipped well, he'd be in a position of getting a par. And he shot like, you know, 82, 83, 83, 84 consistently, never pulling a wood out of the bag. I thought that was fascinating.
It is, and there's so many different strategies. That's the exciting thing about speed golf is when you add time into the equation, you have to think, I don't want to be playing Army golf. I can't be going left, right, left, right, left, right. I got to find the fairway because the straighter the line that I take, then also the I'm not running as far, and I'm also saving time. And so that's a key element to it is, find a way to get the ball in the fairway and get moving in a forward direction.
I love that term, Army golf. That's basically you've watched me play. The other aspect, the first time people come out to play, they have a tendency to hockey puck it around the green because they don't quite understand that a minute is, a stroke is a minute. And
right.
So you've got to at least take a breath when you get to the green. But by eliminating the practice swings and just getting up and hitting the ball, I just find that it's you don't gain anything by all that waggling around and by all the practice swings.
Right. And imagine somebody I used to work with Butch Harmon on my golf swing. I used to work with Bob Rotella on my mental game because I wanted to be one of the best players in the world. And so when you do that and when you're out there playing on the tour, you have a very specific routine that you've practiced a million times, and you're going to go through that routine. And as I began playing speed golf, I started to tear away each of these little pieces of my pre-shot routine to save time. And what I began to discover was that I don't need any of this to perform. It's all been a crutch that is not needed. And you know how it is. When you're out there and your body's just performing, it is an extremely satisfying and joyful experience to just almost be an observer and to just experience your body pulling off the shot. It's so much fun, and it's so exhilarating, and it's really a different kind of golf. I mean, that's the longer I play it, the more I discover that playing golf fast, we almost need another name for what that is.
Well, I think it's almost more natural because you think of every other sport you do, baseball, football, basketball, anything like that, you react to a ball,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you play golf, you stand and think and process. And I don't think it's natural as an athlete. There's just too much thinking involved. Well, when you play it this way, thinking goes out the window. You just react as an athlete. You run up and your mind goes, okay, I've got my 8-iron and I'm going to hit it to the center of the green. Next thing you know, you do it.
Yep, absolutely. That's it.
So what are your goals, Scott, for taking speed golf to the next level?
Yeah, so one of the things that I'm working on with a couple of other the national association leaders around the world, Speed Golf Australia, Speed Golf UK, and now Speed Golf USA are the three primaries, but we are building out what we're calling a pace of play kit for golf courses. So what we're going to do is explain to them the opportunities and benefits of beginning to offer faster play at their golf course. It doesn't just mean speed golf, it just means
faster play.
Providing opportunities for golfers to say, I can't play golf anymore because I don't have 4 hours, which is so many people.
Yes.
But to say, we're going to give you opportunities to come out here and really then provide options for golf courses for them to figure out what works best for their golf course. And again, we're not going to save the day and help them make, $100 extra $1,000 a year. But if we can help them make $4,000, $5,000, $20,000 extra dollars a year, that's a big difference, and that keeps some of these golf courses' doors open. So we're working on developing that out so that the golf courses can begin to sell and promote speed golf and faster play at a grassroots level so that it's not just one or two or 10 people that are really passionate about the sport that are trying to do it. So we're going to get the industry involved. We're going to get the operators involved. And then we're also going to begin having speed golf events around
mm-hmm.
the country.
Yeah.
And we're going to come to LA in late July. I hope that one happens. I would love to do one with you down in San Diego. I think we'd get so many people out there.
Yeah.
It would be a lot of fun. So I look forward to that. We're going to be in New York. We're going to be in Vegas. We're going to be down here in Houston. So we've got this little tour that's forming. And so those two things I think are kind of the primary. And then I have a podcast as well. It's called The Pace of Change Golf Podcast.
Yep.
So we're just trying to get the word out as well so that people who like listening to that to podcasts, people that like blogs to find out about, what's going on the fringes of the sport, on the, the most innovative things that are happening in the sport. Well, that's what we're covering so we can get, kind of more ears listening to that.
I think what we really need is a, Tiger obviously is huge, but we need sort of a a PGA player to embrace it and say, listen, this is helping my game. I'm playing better because I'm going out and running a few rounds a week. That to me will be a turning point to get more people interested. Then it'll be the golf course's understanding, hey, if you set aside one morning a week and have people starting at, you know, at 5 a.m. and by 7 they're all off your course and you've made an extra, you know, $500 or $1,000 just by having those folks out there, that'll be the next thing. The economics is going to make a big difference.
Yeah, it absolutely will. And again, we're utilizing the golf course at a time when they're not making money anyway. So to say, hey, I can make you an extra $220, you know, on Wednesday morning.
Yes.
Well, there's no reason to say no. We're not bothering anybody. And
exactly.
We're just making you money. And then they come in and they buy their bananas and banana breads and, you know, Gatorades. And you make a little extra money that way. And you might also find that these people start coming out and playing traditional golf or hitting golf balls on the range or whatever it is. So there's just so many opportunities. And reasons why they should do that as well.
I love it, Scott. And well, congrats on everything you're doing. And so the best way for people to follow, just paceofchange.com, is that a good way for people?
Yeah, paceofchange.com, which is our website. You can access everything there. And if you want to check out or sign up for our newsletter or be notified when Speed Golf is in your area, you can go to usaspeedgolf.com and check out some really cool videos there. And, of course, sign up, and we'll keep you updated on how Speed Golf is progressing throughout the year.
Love it. Hey, Scott, as always, thanks so much for taking time. It was great having you here in San Diego and getting to meet you. Love what you're doing. And, you know, this is, as Huddle and I were chatting just a little bit ago, it is a lifetime fitness type of sport, and people just need to find it. And I think we also need some of the golf operators to play themselves and understand how cool it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to kind of touch one last thing on that last point, which is at the Tour Championship this year, which is at Eastlake every year in Atlanta, Kevin Na was by himself in the final round on Sunday morning. So he went out and played the Tour Championship golf course in under 2 hours. He did it in an hour and 59 minutes with his caddy and his big bag running behind him. But he shot 70, shot even par, and he birdied the last four holes to do that.
Wow.
Then, at Tiger Woods' event down in the Bahamas, Jimmy Walker on a Saturday morning was playing by himself. His caddy, Andy Sanders, is my best friend. They went out and actually beat Kevin Na's time. They did it in an hour and 58 minutes, and he shot 66, birding four of the last five holes. So that right there tells you, if they
absolutely
did that in under 2 hours and they're PGA Tour players, this is a real opportunity. But, yeah, I think once we get some of the media surrounding the PGA Tour to go, hey, I see an opportunity here to push this and to make fast golf exciting. I think it's going to attract young people. I think it's going to attract whole new markets of people. So we're almost there. And, you know, one of my objectives, Bob, is to make all of the work that you've done in speed golf and all of the passion you've had for it to make it a lasting and a lasting success that moves on into the future. So we're working hard to do that. It was great to meet you this summer and to see your foundation's headquarters. You guys are doing such amazing things over there. So I look forward to getting back out there soon and spending some more time with you.
I love it. Scott Dowley has been our guest. Again, we are brought to you by ToughManTriathlon.com, VeloFix.com, RunCatalina.com, the Catalina Island Marathon 40th anniversary coming up on Saturday, March 11th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $80 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on iTunes on BabbittVille.com and subscribe to our Endurance World newsletter. And as always, endurance lives here.